Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
You sound a little snotty over there, Paul.
I am sick. I'm sick of the election. I'm sick of all the news coverage. I'm sick of everybody who was wrong. I'm sick of the thinking of the next 4 years with this clown in the car, driving the car here.
Wow.
I'm sick.
I was going to tell people, I was warning people that we're going to vent again today.
I'm sick. I am sick. I'm feeling sick. I don't know if it's just the weather or whatever.
Tell me how you really feel.
I'm happy.
No, tell me how you really feel.
I really feel like, and this is probably an extreme analogy, but I kind of feel like after 9/11, I feel like a major blow has been struck to our country, and I can't wrap my head around it. I really do.
So again, we talked about this last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's been 7 days.
Uh-huh.
Has it gotten any more real for you?
No.
Because that's the thing, right? It's like
it seems surreal. It seems unreal. Even the few reports I've read said even Trump and his followers, in their wildest imagination, didn't really think they were winning. Everybody thought they were losing, including them. But they didn't. He rallied people in the same way that Obama rallied a constituency that had never voted, and therefore we didn't know how powerful it could be. Young people, African Americans, minorities, single women. These are not people that had ever voted in an election. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time when Obama won, and they called Ohio and said he's going to be the next president. And Karl Rove, I happened to be watching Fox News at the time, because I do flick back and forth to get different opinions. And Karl Rove lost it. He said, that can't be. You're wrong. You're completely wrong. They said, we're not. He's won Ohio. And they're like, can't be. All his mathematical models couldn't imagine that many African Americans and young people turning out. And the assumption was it was a once-in-a-generation occurrence. It'll never happen again. You got it to happen twice.
So what do you say to people that are, after 4 days, saying, get over it?
Oh, it's going to be very hard to get over, I think. And people say, why? I've had Republicans say, well, they already come in and they're angry. Well, people are protesting. You said, we didn't protest when we lost. No, you guys just said that you were going to challenge the election.
For 8 years.
Yeah, or you just blocked Obama for 8 years. Yeah, the very first week he's in office, you said, we're going to do everything we can to make him a one-term president. Yeah, you willingly accepted him in the office. I'll tell you a couple of things that I just don't understand. One, I don't know why people are that mad. What? Yes. I said this on Facebook. I said this to friends of mine back in Minmont. You all say Obama is the worst president.
Mad about
Obama and the direction of the country, and the country's growing, the direction of the country. Why? Has the economy – here's two completing facts that are both true. This has been the longest sustained recovery in the history of America. It's also been the weakest sustained recovery. It's limping along at 1%. But it's still growing. We've defied the odds. We haven't slipped back into recession or a stock market tumble or anything that's supposed to happen every 5-6 years. We haven't. So I can see why maybe you're not happy and you wish it was better or something. I understand why people in the Midwest feel left behind by this whole world. The jobs have left them. The country has taken a direction they don't like with gay marriage and all these kinds of things. All these things they find offensive. Culturally and economically, as Obama said the other day, these people feel angry and left behind. But when people tell me Obama's the worst president in the world, I say, why? If anything, he was kind of ineffective. The Republicans worked. He didn't do much. He passed Obamacare, and I can't point to a lot of things. He rescued the auto industry, which they seem to have forgotten about back in the Midwest. He also doubled exports, which he never talks about. I don't know why he doesn't proclaim that loudly. He did put $1 billion, like Bush did, into building infrastructure, but he never went to the ribbon cuttings or promoted it, so nobody knows what he built any more than know what Bush built with his trillion dollars. So all of that leaves me with this feeling like, why? There's part of the country that looks at the same facts I do and comes to completely different conclusions.
Well, here's the thing, though, right? Is it simply? I think you know your point, especially on the car manufacturers and saving the car industry.
And he saved the car industry and all those jobs that went with it. And ostensibly because the unions have voted historically Democratic, and that was his base, and there's an awful lot of minorities employed by those companies, and that's his base. But he never touted it or talked about it much, and it quickly evaporated. We quickly got forgotten. Why isn't Michigan still grateful that he saved the car business?
You know, that's an interesting evaluation, because I think – the guy, it actually makes kind of a lot of sense. So unfortunate, in a way, you know, the old adage about, you know, you got to toot your own horn.
Yeah. And he never did. But he never did.
That wasn't really him, right? He never really tooted on his own horn. You know, but I will tell you, you know, people are pointing fingers everywhere. And, oh, my God, did the Democratic Party in internal infrastructure basically start pointing fingers really quick.
This is going to be an ugly, prolonged fight in both parties.
Unbelievable, right? I mean, the audacity of people that they would basically, you know, they started in July or June, right after the convention, right? Oh, get on the bandwagon. What are you doing?
Because that's historically what you're supposed to do. Let's unite. Hillary clearly had all the advantage. Up until the day before, she was winning by significant numbers. They were thinking she was going to flip it all.
Yeah, but you know what? Michael Moore said something.
Michael Moore was the one that pointed it out.
But Michael Moore said something after the election. He said the same polls had her up in Michigan and in Ohio, right, in Wisconsin, before the primary.
Uh-huh.
At the end of the day, okay?
The Democratic
and
the, primary.
And yes, and then Sanders took each one of those states.
Michael Moore turned out to have his finger more on the pulse.
So the polls that you just mentioned about having her be up were bogus, because those are the same polls that also had Trump down.
Yes, and how can the polls be that bad? Because polls have to find a sampling of
people.
Well,
it's where do you sample?
Yes, and clearly you're not going to go sample in rural areas that have historically not voted. Any more than when Obama won, you're not going to sample among African Americans and young people who historically don't turn out to vote. Why bother sampling there? These people never turn. We've got 50 years of data that proves that they don't vote. So in the same way that Obama upended the polls, so did Trump.
So you're asking the same question. I don't know if you caught this. You've been avoiding the news. You know, you've been kind of hermit in a cave.
I have. I can't watch the news anymore.
Okay, but did you catch SNL?
No. Okay. I won't watch anything to do with any of this.
All right, so I'm going to share this with you because good old Dave Chappelle made an appearance on SNL.
Did he? Dave Chappelle. I love Dave Chappelle.
Right. So Dave Chappelle made an appearance. Okay. Now imagine this.
We got to get him here on the red line.
We really need to get Dave. Dave, if you're listening, I love your show. What the heck, man? Where did the show go? Come on. We got to get the show back on there. I know the whole story behind it, but it was really great to see him on SNL. And he's sitting there.
I don't know the whole story. One of these days you'll have to tell me the whole story, because I still don't quite think I understand what happened with his show. Okay. But anyway.
All right. So there was a lot of moving parts. Okay, yes. Let's just leave it at that. But he's sitting in a room, like a loft apartment, you know, very trendy kind of loft opens thing, you know, in Manhattan somewhere or whatever.
Right.
And there's all these, you know, sort of liberal, you know, millennial white people sitting around him. He's the only African-American black guy in that room. I'll say black. You know, we got Trump in the – I can say black now.
We're going back to saying black.
Dave is sitting on the sofa, right? And it's all this like sort of like mid-century modern yellowish kind of, you know, stuff. Right?
Spoken like a designer.
Furniture, right. And they're going through like, you know, 6 o'clock. And then they're back and go, you know, 6:30 or whatever, right? And then at one point, one of the ladies in the room says, and by the way, just to make another point, guess who drops in the middle of the evening? Chris Rock.
No, Chris Rock.
Okay.
Another great guy.
So the lady asks, which is what you're asking, why aren't people turning out for Hillary the way they did for Barack Obama?
Right.
And Chris answers, I mean, maybe because you're replacing a charismatic 40-year-old black guy with a 70-year-old white woman?
Maybe.
That's like the Knicks replacing Patrick Ewing with Neil Patrick Harris.
Ouch.
Okay.
Some truth to that.
Right. But that's what you know, I guess there is a lot of truth in that. You know, you could tell, right? I mean, this wasn't just a loss, okay, that nobody saw coming in a way, right? But it was a huge loss of control. The House, the Senate, The White House.
And as one of my Republican friends pointed out to me, the Republicans also have the largest number of governorships and state houses
yes.
they've ever had.
Yes.
They really are in complete control of this country. And except for the two coasts, they have control over everything else. Now, in the two coasts, I'll give you a flip side of this.
I don't want to make this the whole show, but it does speak to something, right? It speaks to the fact that, just like with this show, people get their news, people get their information from untraditional places, right? And that's good and that's bad. People have said, you know, that we no longer basically seek news and information. What we seek is revalidation of our own position by listening to those channels that basically speak to us in the bubble of our making. That basically you've got people that will watch CNN and nothing but CNN. People that will watch MSNBC. People that will watch Fox. People that will listen to KFI. People that will listen to, what is that thing? Public radio. Public radio, NPR. Okay? That the people basically are already of a mindset, and then they just seek information that validates their opinion.
Well, what I was
How do we break that cycle? Because that's
yeah.
that's where really I think the danger lies.
We're all living in a bubble here, and we only listen to each other. And I wrote a piece on my blog and on our Facebook page about that. I said that because somebody, one of the, at the Newman School, I forgot now what the Neiman or Newman School, it has to do with School of Journalism, and they do a very elitist, I guess you'd say, look at media all the time, really in-depth and very academic and very insightful, I think. And they talked about how media has fragmented into a bunch. There is no national conversation anymore. There are few things where we have a shared experience, like the Super Bowl, where we all come together and watch one thing, or we don't tune in every Friday night to must-see TV. We don't have the same conversations around the water cooler the next morning about what they said on Friends or Cheers or whatever. We don't have the same conversations anymore, which is my point. Two groups of people looked at the same data, the same experience, and said, one group said, could be a little better, but not too bad. And the other group said, no, this is the end of the world, and it's about time. We have to take our country back. We have to make America great again. And they're like, we're already great. We're already doing good.
So let's be, I mean
Obama tried to address that before and said, we're living with two sets of realities, two sets of facts.
Okay, but let's just address that on a very personal level. Where you're at, where I'm at. Because I think, you know, it's been a week, over a week now, right? Just about. Like a week and a week
even,
and a day.
I can't even tell.
Week
you
and a day, right? Hasn't it been a week and a week and a day?
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. A week and a day. Where are you right now?
I am in denial and depression.
I mean, this is
serious.
It's a good way to put
very
it because for those who say, get over it. Okay,
I'm not.
For some people, this is the same way as it was for the Republicans when Obama was elected. This is a sense of loss. This is a sense of grief.
Yeah.
This is a sense of something died.
Yeah, something changed.
And I'll tell you what, it was even no more than just something died. It died, and it was sudden,
unexpected.
Right?
Yeah.
This wasn't like I'm waiting for the person for 20 years and they're basically slowly fading away.
Right.
This is something that happened and it was totally unexpected.
If Hillary had been losing for a while, we could have been wrapped our head around it. And again, I understand why people...
Some of us kind of had...
Yeah.
I'm fishing for you had it right with Sanders, but it's okay.
You had it right with Sanders.
All right. No, but I'm there's a grieving process going on, right?
Yeah.
So you're in what? Denial?
Denial and disbelief. I can't still believe it, and I'm still in denial. I can't. When I think of him in the next 4 years, grinning, saying off the cuff, cocky, macho remarks, and maybe trying to do any part of this crazy agenda, this wild extremist agenda. We've had extremists before. You know, I'm a student of history. In the 1840s, go back and look, I think it was actually the 1850s, right before the Civil War. There was a party that sprang up, and they called themselves the Know Nothing Party, because that was, they supposedly, I know nothing about this, I know nothing about this. And they were an anti-immigrant party. And Millard Fillmore, who had been president and then lost, was nominated on their ticket and ran as the candidate for the Know Nothing Party. It was part of that whole craziness.
So the Know Nothing was used as basically a cover my ass. That's my answer.
It was
kind of.
I'd have to go look it up again. It was kind of
my plausible
denial.
Deniability that I don't have an answer for you. I know nothing.
Right. But they literally, that became their name, and they became known as the Know Nothing Party. And it was a clearly anti-immigrant party. Now, people don't remember, because history is what happened 5 days ago or five years ago. But there was a flood of Irish immigrants that came over in the 1840s after the potato famine. That's when my relatives all came over, supposedly. People were starved. Potato was the number one crop in Ireland. It overnight failed, and for 2 years there was massive migration of millions of Irish to this country. And people say, who cares? Well, in those days, it wasn't Mexicans they hated. It wasn't African-Americans they hated. It was Irish, because Irish were Catholic. And this was an English country. This was still a country that 100 years before was an English colony. Mm-hmm. And the English and the Irish have this hatred of each other. It goes back centuries, and they've fought each other, and it's mostly over religious lines, Protestantism and Catholicism. Okay, that just seems archaic and forgotten, and who cares?
Everybody comes in from the quote-unquote old world, brings their baggage with them.
Yeah, and
this is nothing new.
But that was, I mean, they literally had the KKK at that time was not just the KKK was really founded after the Civil War, but when the KKK erupted, it wasn't just anti-black, it was anti-immigrant and anti-Irish, and they were huge, they controlled the go look up the KKK, like in the 1920s. They marched down Pennsylvania Avenue. That was when they were at their height. And they controlled state legislatures, like in Indiana and other places in the Midwest, Oklahoma and Indiana, I remember, it was two big ones. And they really were a powerful force. And they weren't just anti-black, they were anti-immigrant. And mostly Catholic immigrants, because they thought Catholicism was the devil, and the Pope is going to... And it was up until the 1960s that John F. Kennedy
had... Well, it really sounds like the attitude we have about Islamists.
Totally. So we've been through these ugly periods before, but they were always fringe movements. They didn't ever rise up and take hold of national government like this did. And when you look at what Steve... people are already reporting what this mysterious guy, Steve Bannon, who runs Breitbart... who was, by the way, a movie producer out here after he worked for Goldman Sachs. He produced, I have to go look it up, but a couple of big blockbuster movies. He raised the money for them. That's never happened before. We've never had a movie producer in the behind the throne.
Well, what was that movie that was the tale that wagged the dog?
Oh, yeah, right. That was fascinating. I don't know who did that. Anyway, so...
With Dustin Hoffman.
The point of the story being... Go look at what Breitbart's been published. I'd never even read Breitbart before. I'd heard of him. It was like an extremist, right-wing, scare, frightened thing. And it's everybody uses the same adjectives to describe them. Anti-Semitic. He called... go look it up. What he called... who's the guy? Bill Kristol, who's the famous conservative columnist and used to be on Fox until they kicked him off because he was so anti-Trump. And they called him an angry Jew and other sorts of things. I mean, they've said what are outwardly, again, anti-Semitic stuff.
Right.
They've said it about immigrants. They've said it about women.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Horrible things. And this guy is behind the throne now.
But I'm going to play devil's advocate, okay?
Right. That's never happened.
If it's everything that people, if there's a lot of people that are thinking this, but for all these years have basically not wanted to, didn't feel comfortable to openly say it.
Because it wasn't politically correct.
Are we not better off for venting that publicly?
No, because it's an ugly...
I understand I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I'm saying...
Believe me, where I grew up, everybody used the N-word. It was very racist. Catholics were still in the 1960s thought of suspiciously. Immigrants, we didn't even think of other immigrants. There were no other immigrants. We weren't thinking of... Look at when the Chinese came over into California in the 1850s and they used them to build the railroads, the cross-continental railroads and stuff. There was a lot of legislation, a lot of feeling of anger when the Chinese flooded here, just like when the Irish flooded. We've had this anti-immigration wave repeatedly. It's been a dark underbelly of American history, but it's never been mainstream.
But isn't it really a dark underbelly of humanity, though?
Well, maybe. And we're trying to do something no country's ever done. We're trying to mesh people together that don't that in their home countries don't get along. We're trying to bring Arabs and Israelis over here and have them get along. We're trying to bring Muslims and Christians that don't get along in their native lands and have them get along. We're trying to get, we brought over a whole group of people as slaves, and then we wonder why they never feel totally totally welcomed in society here, totally assimilated into society here. They didn't come here willingly, and for 100 years we tried to keep them enslaved in some way, shape, or form. We physically kept them enslaved, and then we tried to keep them politically enslaved. This has been an ugly undercurrent of American policy of American psyche for a long time. The so-called, what Hillary was trying to get at, the so-called basket of deplorables, the right-wing conspirators, the left-wing communists, the extreme elements on both sides that we don't want to acknowledge, and particularly this racism stuff. And I don't think most Republicans really accept how Trump won. He trumped by tapping into that with people like Steve Bannon and Breitbart News, who openly encouraged the so-called alt-right.
But what I'm not hearing,
and used it.
What I'm not hearing, except from very few, okay, is that was the same sentiment. Same sentiment. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the uglier side of that, but definitely the disenfranchised, I have a feeling that the voice that I have is being reduced and diminished.
Right.
Okay. That Bernie Sanders tapped into.
No question. He tapped into the economy. There's two parts of the Trump phenomenon in small towns. And I know people. I have lots of cousins in these little small towns that voted for Trump. I've been watching, like Michael Moore, my Facebook feed for some time and saying, I don't know. How can she be winning in Michigan? I'm not hearing this. How can he be winning in Minnesota? I'm not hearing this. How can she be winning in Pennsylvania? I'm not hearing this. I have a small sample of people, but they're all uniformly angry and feeling left behind. And here's two things they feel left behind by: culturally and economically. Now, culturally is a politically correct word of saying they don't like the fact America's getting less white, mm-hmm. quite frankly. And they don't like the fact that America's getting more secular and less religious. Those two currents have been building up anger for a long time. And they also feel economically left out. Recovery, what recovery? I haven't felt it in Michigan or Indiana or Pennsylvania. The coal mines in West Virginia, the coal country in western Pennsylvania. They feel totally abandoned and forgotten, and this whole globalism that you talk about, that's just a buzzword for stealing my jobs and sending them somewhere else. And these immigrants you talk about, those just cheap labor taking my jobs
away. And neither side of the aisle, by the way, is guiltless of that.
No. So what has really happened, I think, as I really try and look at this, is this is everybody say it's a lot of ways to describe it. First, I thought it was hate wins. Well, it's more than that. First, I thought it's the rural areas rise up again and tell the big cities and the coasts, go stick it up your nose here. And it's a flip their finger to the two coasts and to the two power centers there. They hate Hollywood. I'm talking about back in the Midwest, the Rust Belt that I know. They've always hated this in the South, but they hate it now in the Rust Belt, too. They hate Hollywood, liberalism and all the progressivism and secularism that represents. And they hate Hollywood. They hate Silicon Valley, because that's a recovery they ain't seeing. That's the new economy and the new world and globalism, and we're making stuff all. Apple is headquartered up in the Bay Area, but they make it over in Taiwan and China and stuff. And they hate Wall Street, because they feel like Wall Street has rigged the system against them. So the three power centers that exist, and the media center, four. So those four groups, media, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, are exclusively located on the two coasts. The coastal elites that run this country, this was a rejection of them. And in many ways, shame on us, because other than Bernie, the Democratic Party has ignored the plight of the Midwesterners.
So was it,
other than the Trump, the Republican Party has ignored that same group of people.
Okay, so let me ask the question that everybody's probably debating in their own heads or with family members, stuff like that. right now, which is okay. This rebuttal that you're talking about, this
angry rejection. Screw you! You've ignored us. You've the country has moved culturally in a direction we don't like for too long.
So I just told you
move economically, and you haven't listened.
I just told you the man. And by the way, I don't know that it's. I mean, I don't know that you can say that this is an embracement of the Republican Party,
no,
or a rejection of the Democratic Party.
That's the key point. It's not.
I think it's a rejection of elites of both. Elites.
People trying to tell you think you're so smart. You think you're so smug. They use the words like, they're always so smug. They're always telling us what to do. We've got to take it back. It's not our country anymore. We've got to make it great again. All of this, these euphemisms, these terms they use are really about they feel they're no longer part of America. So, and a couple of them, one of my friends said, after Hillary lost, one of them started ragging on the fact she didn't have an American flag lapel pin on, which just drives me crazy. That's all it takes to be a patriot, put an American flag pin on, and if you don't have it, you're, you know, not American. Every Republican now has to have this little thing on there. It's like we're North Korea, where they have to have the picture of the dear leader on every wall and on every piece of garment.
But
anyway, so the point is my friends immediately started saying, that's okay. She isn't part of she isn't part of our America anyway. That's the words they used. And I wrote back and I said, I'm not so sure I am either anymore. Your vision of America and my vision of America are totally different. I like exports. I like globalism. I understand the disruption it's caused to traditional economies and traditional industries like steel and coal and the auto industry and stuff. But it's inevitable. You can't hold back change. And if you embrace it, we should be making all the stuff that the world buys. We already do in some ways. We make movies that everybody buys. We make medical devices here at Orange County that everybody buys.
So it almost sounds to me like
they hate the word globalism.
We just vented.
Yeah.
And said, fuck you. Excuse, we can say that on there, right?
Sure.
Okay. Said, fuck you. And yo, sounds good, man. It feels good when I do that. Okay. But basically, now it's the day after.
Right.
Now the drunken party of celebrating that, yeah, I stuck it to somebody.
Yes.
I wake up in the morning. Now I got to show up to work, proverbially. Now I got to basically do the next thing.
And that's what
are they going to deliver?
So therein lies the dilemma that none of us know, because he's a wild card. We have no way to know. He's been on every issue. He was a Democrat 3 years ago. Now he's a right-wing Republican. Look at some of the crazy people he's put behind him. The Steve Bannon, who is the editor of Breitbart. Go look up the hateful things that Breitbart has been spewing. I mean, it's like out of Nazi Germany. It's.
By the way, the guy's originally Irish.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. I hate to admit that. So,
I guess what I'm asking, Paul, is, all right, now we're here. Now, are they going to deliver? And isn't that something that is a concern and a worry in different ways to everybody?
You nailed it right there. And I'll tell you, I've been testing the waters. I'm Michael Moore, testing my friends.
Waters in Flint, Michigan? I'm scared.
Yeah, ouch.
I had to.
By
the way, what the heck was with Obama, man? What, go over and drink the water and basically say, oh, it's safe? Well, that's the other thing. Like,
let's go back a step in time.
Would he have done that in 2008?
If we were going to be critical of Obama, and I think there is certainly room, as much as I like the guy and as much as I think he was a breath of fresh air and opened some new doors and broke through some barriers and did some good things, I think he was terrible at touting his own achievements. He doubled exports and never talked about it. He saved the car business and rarely mentions it. He pulled us out of the greatest deep recession we've had since the Great Depression, and nobody gives him any credit for it here. Like, it just happens without any...
No good deeds goes unpunished.
Right. And he did try and get more people health care coverage. He did that. What he didn't do
You mean the one that has good components that Trump isn't going to get rid of?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Actually he's changed the name of it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he did in many ways, but in many other ways, one of the things he didn't do is constantly, which Trump I think will do. I think there is, I'll give you one good news about Trump.
Toot his own horn?
He's going to toot his own horn. So, for example, let's talk about infrastructure. One of the things that I think Trump can do and will do and should do is he's going to spend another $1 trillion. Bush did it trying to inject some money into the economy when the banks and credit collapsed. Obama followed up with another $1 trillion and did that, which everybody groaned on the Republican side, but it helped. And I think Trump's going to do the same thing. He's going to finish that. He's going to put another $1 trillion into this. And only this time, he'll be at every ribbon cutting. He'll be at every opening of a sewer, every opening of an airport, every opening of a bridge. And that will give people a sense that we're moving again. We're moving forward. What it won't do is address the debt, which is still, oddly enough, neither one of these candidates wanted to talk about the debt, the massive debt that we've accumulated here. That used to be the Republican priority. Not anymore. Right. He's going to go out. He's going to do the same mistakes that Bush
did. Well, they're saying he's increasing. He's going to increase.
Because he's going to...
And part of it is it's a necessary expenditure, whoever it is, because infrastructure is old.
Right. So we're going to have to spend that, and that's going to increase the debt. And whether you like it or not, and there's nobody's going to pay for it, it's just money that we've delayed and delayed and delayed, and now we're going to have to pay for it. And it's at the worst time because we're already deeply in debt. The credit cards are already maxed out. Now... So I think you will see a massive infrastructure program. He's a builder. He's a businessman. He likes building big things like hotels and grand edifices. You know, he likes building big. What does he call them? I'm thinking prominent properties. You know, like
iconic
things. Yeah. So he's going to build, and I think people will like that, and they'll go for that, and both sides, and that'll be something you can get through. Both the Democrats and Republicans will support. It won't address the debt. What he frightens me about is exactly what the point you've talked about. In this studio, since the last week, I've asked everybody, was this just tough talk? Is he just a tough talker, but he doesn't really mean it? It's just a way to negotiate. I'm going to start big and bombastic, and then I'll eventually compromise, but I'll scare you at first by talking scary stuff, and then I'll get more sensible and reasonable. That seems to be the general consensus among the elites. He's not as crazy as he seems. He really won't do all these things. He'll build up a little bit of the wall, and he'll say, there, we fixed it. But he won't build a massive new 20-foot wall.
So what happens to all those people that really want that?
Exactly. You nailed it. Because when you ask my friends back in the Midwest, they immediately shoot back, he better... or we'll kick him out, too.
Say that again, please, Paul.
I can show you post after post when I put this on Facebook and said, okay, is he really going to build a wall? Is he really going to try and kick out 10 million people in this country? Is he really going to prosecute Hillary and put her in jail? And is he really going to
list those again, and I'll give you my answers.
Okay. Let's start with the obvious.
We have it on record.
Let's start with the easiest one. Is he really going to... he said he was going to appoint a special prosecutor and put Hillary in jail. Is he going to do that? Okay. My friends say he better. That's what they're gleeful about. If he says, nah, there's no point in doing it, we'll move on, they're not going to be happy with that answer. They want to see her in jail.
That's not going to happen.
She represents to them this crony capitalism, this I rubbed your back, you rubbed mine.
You want me to tell you why it's not going to happen?
Well, for a variety of reasons, it would tear the country apart.
It's a very, very simple, basic reason.
Okay,
because if he opens that door, everybody else that's sitting around him is now possibly subject to the same.
Oh yeah,
because they're all friggin' complicit.
Exactly,
and they all basically, you know, it's like the old adage about people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yes, right.
It's exactly the reason. Forget everything else. Forget all the little, you know, flowery stuff and all the distractions and the shiny objects and everything around it. The bottom line why he is not going to do that is because imagine if he opened that.
I agree.
They're already talking about Giuliani and conflict of interest.
But you're an elite. You're a coastal elite.
Oh, I was accused by a Democrat. I heard it secondhand, but I was accused by a Democrat who said, who's this Rod guy? You know, he's posting food pictures. Oh, my God, I didn't realize that posting food pictures, you know, and eating at restaurants on Facebook makes me the one percenter.
Yeah.
But I basically was accused of being the one percenter. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you somehow figured that I was looking for your approval?
Whether you know it or not, to my friends in the Midwest and those people in rural Indiana and rural Pennsylvania.
I can wear a baseball cap and go take a little baseball and get it signed at the Cubs any day, right? Okay.
You're a rural elite. I mean, you're a coastal elite.
I can't believe you are.
Okay. All right. I am too. I've become a coastal elite.
Okay, that's the first question.
All right. Number
no,
two.
No, Hillary is not going to get prosecuted.
Is he going to really build a wall and make Mexico pay for it?
No. No, wait a minute. Break it down into two parts.
Yeah. Well,
is he going to build a wall? No. Is Mexico going to pay for it? Hell no. How is he going to get Mexico to pay for it?
Well, he was going to put a tariff on all Mexicans, like a lot of people from poor countries, send money home to support their relatives through wire transfers, and he was going to put a tax
and
or
I'll
a tariff
and I'll,
on
and I'll tell you what the bottom line is. They're going to basically say we looked into the immigration guidelines, and we looked into visas, and we tightened it, and we added one more layer of friggin' bureaucracy.
And a few more
bunch of more people wearing black shirts and black boots and walking with German shepherds in the halls or something. But at the end of the day, the reason why that's not going to happen is because the state of California, Arizona, and New Mexico will friggin' secede because of the fact that they basically just slit the throat of those states and eliminated cheap labor.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the people that are in that stratosphere that he lives in exist on one condition.
Cheap labor.
Lower cost, increased profit.
Couldn't agree more.
Benefit stockholders.
You really want to? You really think immigration's a problem? Illegal Mexican immigration, and you want to stop it? Quit hiring them. If all the Republican businessmen who vote Republican historically would just quit hiring them for their factories and their restaurants and their mansions and all the other stuff that they employ these people in, they'd go home. They're not idiots. This notion that they're all on welfare is just false. All right, so.
That's two.
Two.
Two and
number
a half.
Three.
Okay. Two or three.
Is he going to literally, he says they all got to go. He said it a couple weeks before the election, repeatedly, over and over again. He tried to soften it.
To clear the swamp.
No. Is he going to round up 10 million people? He's going to go door to door and pull them out and ship them back?
No.
Okay. If he doesn't, my friends will revolt because they are convinced that is real and has to happen.
Well, I got another reality check for you. If he did that.
Oh.
Hold on. The infrastructure that would have to be put in place to accomplish that.
Massive.
All right.
Budget buster.
Might solve the unemployment numbers. However, it also is going to increase government size.
Yes.
It's also going to increase government pensions. It's also going to increase all of those elements that they basically say no to, right?
You're afraid of Big Brother. We're going to create the biggest Big Brother,
right? And
you think those people are going to go willingly?
And the visuals on that are going to scare the living daylights out of everybody, because if it happens to be put in place and they deport how many people?
10 million.
What happens after they've deported the 10 million? You have an infrastructure looking for a job.
Oh, yeah.
What's the next thing they're going to take on?
But that's rural America that's going to go take those jobs. See,
No. Listen to me. They're going to deport the 10 million people.
Right.
But we've built an infrastructure and put it in place to deport the 10 million people. Now this 10 million people have been deported. This is the thing I always talk about. People talk about the
day
off,
but
they never talk about the day after.
Exactly.
So after we've deported 10 million illegal immigrant Latinos.
Every restaurant collapses.
Okay, and the economy is in dire straits now, right? And people are in upheaval because
factories closed.
Okay, but let's just assume none of that economical demise happens. It's just a matter of an institution that's been put in place that has just departed 10 million people.
Logic to a group of people.
Hold on.
You're talking logic.
When
I get it, you get it.
But who's next? What's the next to do list? What do we show up on Monday morning after we departed the 10 million people and sit in that meeting and go, okay? That's a job well done.
All right.
What's next on our hit list?
Can I stop you? Because you are doing what every pundit, every newspaper editor, every corporate CEO, every coastal elite has said
throughout
this election.
No, they have not. And that is the problem.
Because they all laughed.
No,
they all smirked
and said,
this isn't going to happen.
No.
That's stupid. I'm
not laughing or smirking. I'm saying as serious as a heart attack here that if you set up that kind of infrastructure and you give it that job, after that job is done, there's going to be another job because you're not going to dismantle that. Okay,
I
wish to God those elites that you're talking about stood up and said that during the election. We would have had a heated discussion that was face-to-face, same intensity.
Bernie never said it.
Bernie said close to that.
Nobody rounded up and said, we're going to create Nazi Germany and we're going to round up people and put them in concentration camps. I did. Not many others did. I wrote it on Facebook and said, can you imagine what that'll look like? Can you imagine what that'll cost? Can you imagine the fights and riots?
I don't think that's going to happen.
But
Unless it's honest, a way to solve the job issue.
Honest to God.
And I'm being totally facetious.
I'm telling you, totally serious, my friends expect that to happen, and if they don't, we'll be angry and we'll rise up again. That wasn't just a vague promise.
At which point I will say to you, it couldn't happen to a nicer group of people.
Well, but this is the group of people that rose up that we all thought was dead and done and buried, and that it's this is their last gasp maybe, or this is a new resurgence.
Well, I said it yesterday.
This is Brexit.
You know what?
This is angry,
I said, old, white, rural voters. I said it yesterday, and this is no love to the Democratic Party and no love to the Republican Party. I'm an independent. I can basically say that with equal balance on both sides. But here's the thing. I said it myself. I said this party was basically on the brink of disaster, falling apart. Okay, not as an ideological mindset. Not that was going to go away, but as an organized institution, it looked like it was going to fall apart. And it wasn't just a snapshot. This was a evaluation over a course of about a decade. Open civil war internally and all this stuff. Right. What was interesting is that I also said that the minute they basically started pushing for Hillary, I said Hillary is going to go down in history as the savior of the Republican Party.
She did.
Okay.
For a generation, because he's going to, if nothing else, the one thing he will accomplish is he's going to put conservatives
into
the Supreme Court.
But here is the thing.
Right.
The glee that some people are feeling today is, and this is not necessarily to rain on anybody's parade, but maybe an encouragement and a serious request to take the job seriously. Okay, I don't want them to fail because the country is what gets to suffer. However, there is nobody else around to point the finger to anymore and say, we didn't succeed because of X standing there in our way.
I remind you, and I'll have to leave it at this because we've got a 1 o'clock interview here in 2 minutes, is my friends on Facebook said, I said, is he going to prosecute Hillary? Is he going to build a wall? Is he going to round up 10 million people and remove them from this country? And is he going to put up trade barriers to force companies back to bring manufacturing back to this country? And they said, yes, 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 and hell yes. And if he doesn't, we will turn on him too.
Yes, and I believe them. And if somebody – and the thing is that the institute –
Those weren't maybes. He promised
those things. No, Paul, but here's the thing. That would require – In order for that to actually happen,
right?
Okay, that entity, that group of people that are currently pretty much in 100% control,
right?
Okay, would have to have a completely different cultural wiring, because the things that they promised are things that would go against the grain of every single institutionalized person in that ideology.
Spoken like an elite. I'm telling you, the people say, clean them all out, get rid of all the politicians. They've all stood in the way. Both parties, get rid of the Hollywood elite.
How deep of a cut?
All the way. Off with their heads, all of them. This is the French Revolution.
And I'll tell you where that's not going to happen. It's already not happening.
Well, I get it, but... But I'm trying to tell you that
so
everybody
when do the people start saying, no, you're not delivering?
About a year. Well, for a while, they'll say, because he'll blame, it's not my fault I tried. It's the politicians, it's the people standing in my way. And in 2 years, he'll come back and say, you know what? You gave me control, but I need more control.
Well, and that
I need more power.
And let's just leave that as a positive take, right?
Not too positive.
For all these people that say, get over it. And I remind them that it took certain people 8 years and still didn't come to terms with Obama.
Right.
Next time you say to somebody, get over it, because they happen to be like Paul and feeling in denial right now, I'll remind you that within a week, people have moved from the first stage of grief, which is denial, to the second stage of grief, which is anger.
Right.
Okay? And the prediction is that unless things are delivered on the next year, in a year, we'll be looking at a different reality on the ground. So take
Trump is so good at, because these people have waited so long, they'll cut him some slack for a while. He will come back in a year and say, give me more power, like some dictator.
And you know what they do to shows that basically lose audience? They cut him.
I hope so. We'll find out.
See you next week, guys.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.